Welcome to the Spirit-Led Podcast, your guide on a journey to full enlightenment in this beautiful life. I'm your host, Joan Hope Craig. Each episode, we explore spiritual wisdom, life's purpose, and the profound impact of daily choices on our personal growth and the world.
It's such a pleasure to welcome you, Lala Schwartz. Thanks for being on the Spirit-Led Podcast.
Thank you for inviting me. It's my pleasure.
Yeah. I'll tell the audience a little bit about you. Lala Schwartz isn't your average yoga instructor. With over four decades of experience, she's honed her craft to blend expertise with compassion, guiding students and fellow instructors toward physical vitality, emotional healing, and spiritual awakening. Her journey, marked by personal injury and profound self-discovery, fuels her dedication to sharing the profound wisdom of yoga. Certified by the International Association of Yoga Therapists and recognized by the National Yoga Alliance, Lala's credentials speak volumes. Author of the book, Healing Our Backs with Yoga, Lala has recently embarked on a deeper study of the science of breath for physical health, mental stillness, and spiritual connection. Her mission remains clear: to enrich lives and foster transformation through the practice of yoga. Now, Lala, you have been my teacher and guide for over 20 years. We're having our 20-year anniversary this year. And you've guided me personally and my family through injuries, through personal and professional challenges. And I'm keep studying with you because you keep learning. So I'm trying to keep up. And I really respect that you teach from your personal experience. So I always feel I can trust what you're sharing with me. So it is just a great treat and delight to connect publicly with you here, as we've connected in many ways over 20 years. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much for that great introduction, Joan. You know, I really feel that's true. Everything that I teach and offer is something that I've tested out. I put it through the mill. I really test it, you know, and you know, my students have been some of my best teachers because they've been my laboratory, and I've been able to test things on them and see what kind of responses I would get, and that would help me understand the applications of the practices more clearly. So thanks to all my students who continued coming and trusting me and following my lead and having experiences, many of which I believe did send them in a good direction.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and today we're going to talk about breathing, and we could interview you about many things related to yoga, but that's your personal passion and interest right now. And in your bio, you said, you know, breathing for physical health, mental stillness, and spiritual connection, which I think will resonate with a lot of our listeners. So tell us about your journey with breathing, pranayama, and maybe give us an intro to your thoughts right now.
So the first thing I'd like to say is that there's no separation between the body and mind. And we can pretend that we're doing something with our mind that's not affecting our body, but in reality it is. There's a chemistry connection, and it's never more obvious than with breathing. So back 2022, I ended up with a heart condition. It had been just post-COVID. I had not been as active as I was. You know, that happened with a lot of my friends. I know they all felt like they got older during COVID because they just didn't have the connections. They just didn't have the activity level. And plus, I was dealing with some health condition with my husband at home and not being very active. And so there was a lot of repressed emotion that I had and less activity, and because of that, my diaphragm actually became very lazy. That's the term I would use, is lazy. And I lost what's called vagal tone. So the vagus nerve is the sympathetic and parasympathetic systems of the body. And it's the parasympathetic system. We know this, and we don't know it. So we know it on an intellectual level because we know sympathetic means fight, flight, or freeze. And we know parasympathetic means rest, restore, digest. So we know those two. However, applying it to our life and seeing how it's actually manifesting for us is a different scenario. And so what had happened for me is that I had lost my rest, digest, and restore function. And when the vagus nerve becomes lax and loses tone, the baroreceptors in the heart and the throat that regulate blood pressure also atrophy. And then somebody's blood pressure goes up. So it's very interesting to me. And I had to get a little bit of help. I was using a CPAP machine I used it for 2 years. And I've restored my breath to a level of wellness that right now I'm not using it at all. There's many layers to sleep apnea, and it's different for different people. And I have ways that I've adapted recommended practices, professional recommended practices. I do have a mouthpiece that holds my jaw in place and doesn't let it slide back, but it also doesn't pull it forward. So I made a departure for personal reasons and what it was doing to my body from the standard mouthpiece devices that actually pull the jaw forward to free the airway. Now, I was fortunate that I could do that. Some people probably can't get away with doing that, so each person has to find their right path and work with their healthcare provider, whoever that is. But for me, I was able to sidestep that by just having an upper and lower retainer and have my teeth held together so that the tongue is resting where it belongs at the roof of my mouth. Okay. And then I started taping my mouth shut at night. So I had, thanks to you, who is also you, Miss Joan, are also my teacher, and you're the one who passed my way James Nestor's book called Breath. And you were right, I would love it. I devoured that book. I went back and got adult braces and wore braces for 2 years to help open my mouth again and create space for my tongue. I did a lot of different things because of that book. And because of you. So thank you for that. I really appreciate our interactions and the way that we do this together along our journey. And so the long and the short of it is that I used the CPAP machine as a stepping stone to be able to tape my mouth shut. And I was a chronic mouth breather. When I first read that in Nestor's book, tape my mouth shut, and the first thing came up, are you kidding? I'm going to suffocate. I can't breathe through my nose. But listen to this. Completely clear, both sides. Both sides. And so what I learned about breathing is that something I knew physically from the practice of asana, that the body's very efficient, that everything's connected to everything else. And if one muscle's not working, another muscle's doing the double job. So the body's always compensating and adapting to whatever we present it with in our choices and our lifestyle choices. And so with breathing, if you always breathe through your mouth, your body naturally blocks up your nose to prevent you from over-breathing. So there, you have a question?
Well, I just wanted to pause because you've already given us a lot, and I find sometimes I need to process it a little bit. So what I just want to recap is, like, here you are, you've done yoga like 50 years at this point.
No, not quite 50, 42.
42. All right. So you did yoga for 42 years at this point. And I think you were doing yoga in the womb, but you had all this knowledge and you had a previous pranayama practice for many years. I knew about it because you passed parts of that on to me. But then here you are, 2022, you had the, what we call like a health wake up call, right? So you had to go deeper and look at, even though you'd been doing breathing exercises for many years, you learned some new things. And it sounds like some of the big ones were to do with your mouth structure, where your tongue is, and the fact that you were not even breathing through your nose. So just wanted to pause and like catch us up and then keep going.
Yeah, and also inactivity.
That contributed. You said it made your diaphragm lazy.
Right. And so a lot of what I learned in the Iyengar method, and I'm sort of returning to it again now. I'm sort of in process with that. But what I learned in the Iyengar method for breathing, it was such subtle breathing that it didn't give the same quality of diaphragmatic tone that I needed to tone my vagus nerve and to regulate my heart rate. And what I ended up doing was doing what I call cadence walking. That was one of the big contributors that helped the most. I would do about a 20 minute, about a mile every morning, and I would do cadence walking. And what I mean by that is breathing through the nose only, inhaling for 3 steps and exhaling for 3 steps. And if I got to a place where I felt winded and my heart was pounding in my chest and I felt winded, I would stop, breathe through my nose until my heart settled, and then I would begin again. So, you know, depending on where a person lives, there's more hills or less hills, right? And I have a lot of hills around my house. So sometimes I'd have to stop on my way up the hill, let my heart regulate, and then continue on. But it was always nose breathing. I committed to the science of breathing through the nose, not the mouth. And the way that James Nestor says it, and the way that Patrick McCowan, who teaches the oxygen advantage, how he says it is, there's no structures in the mouth that have anything to do with breathing. That the mouth is for digesting food and the nose is for digesting breath. And when we breathe through the nose, there are about 30 plus functions that happen when we breathe through the nose. And one of those that's the obvious one that gets people's attention is that when we breathe through our nose, we make more nitrous oxide in the system, which boosts our immunity. So it's not just that the nose is filtering, the nose is actually offering chemistry that supports immunity.
Well, and so this is the beginning of the pranayama kind of practices. So is the nose, is breathing through the nose. That sounds like step number one.
Really, ideally, if someone could breathe through their nose all the time, that would indicate a level of wellness. That's an improved level of wellness and an improved level of chemical function. Nose breathing is very important, so we have to go to nose breathing. So catching yourself anytime during the day, if you're not breathing through your nose, just stop and breathe through your nose, close your mouth. Every time you find it open, close your mouth. And there's an interesting test that people can do that I learned from the Oxygen Advantage from Patrick McCowan. It's called the blood oxygen level test, BOLT, the blood oxygen level test. And so I'm talking quite a bit right now, so my diaphragm is contracting because I'm talking. Or if you're a singer, your diaphragm has more tone because your diaphragm contracts more. Or if you walk on a regular basis, your diaphragm will have more tone because you're walking. And I'm not talking about strolling, walking, and smelling every flower on the path. I'm talking about walking, like actually creating some quick walking. It doesn't have to be super fast, but some people who are really outdoor athletes would put it into jogging or cycling or things like that. It's the same thing. We're increasing the volume of air going in and out of the lungs, and that tones the diaphragm. So diaphragmatic tone is important. And you're sitting the way you're sitting right now because you're not speaking and you're just breathing naturally. You could do a Bolt test on yourself right now. Would you like to do that? Okay, good. So I'm going to guide you. Just notice your breath, a normal inhale and a normal exhale. And after a normal exhale, I just want you to pinch your nose closed. And when I see you do that, I'm going to time you. And you're going to let go of your nose weight. You're going to let go of it. When you feel the first air hunger, when it gets uncomfortable enough, but you want to be able to let go of your nose and still have your breath be smooth. So it's not a
Don't go so far I have to gasp. Just right. A little, like I'm a little bit uncomfortable, but not really uncomfortable.
Exactly. So when you're ready, I'll just watch you.
Just
you
not normal breath. I don't try to take a deep breath.
And you exhale and then you hold. Okay, so go ahead. And so I'm just going to take your timing on that and you just relax into it. And we'll see how long your blood oxygen level turns up to be.
Well, you weren't looking. I already
opened. I did look. You were at about 18 seconds. That's not bad.
Well, what I didn't tell you is I've actually been doing that. I've been practicing that. So it the first time I did it, it was like only a few seconds.
How many few?
I don't remember. I actually worked with a respiratory therapist after I had a very bad bronchitis and they had me do this. Perrin White had me do this. And so I don't practice it as much as I'd like to, but I know I have gotten a little better. I think it was maybe like 6 or 7 seconds the first time.
Ooh, yeah. So if it's below 10 seconds, you really consider the system to be compromised and vulnerable. And the ideal is 20 to 25 seconds is the border where it becomes a healthy functional breath is 20 to 25 seconds, and 40 seconds is considered really healthy.
Wow. I mean, I can hold it longer out, but then I have to gasp.
There's two different tests. There's the Bolt test, the blood oxygen level test, where you don't do any gasping at all. And then there's the maximum breath hold where you push it as long as you can and you test that. And so because maximum breath holds, one can use one's willpower. The stronger one's willpower, the longer somebody's going to hold their breath. It doesn't mean that their Bolt score, their base score is good. So there's some really powerful athletes that actually have a Bolt score of a 10.
But they probably have really high willpower because they've trained to do hard things.
Do hard things, and they're always doing it under stress because their baseline is not in the healthy range.
So what I'm hearing is, okay, besides nose breathing, one of these identifiers of health is how long can we retain the breath out without gasping? That's showing us we have enough oxygen already in our bodies that we're not starving for oxygen.
What it's showing us is that there's enough CO2 volume in the body to efficiently use all the oxygen that's present. So the CO2 is the transport chemical that helps the oxygen go from the blood into the brain and into the cells. So when you raise your CO2 level, your Bolt score gets longer and longer when you have more CO2 reserves. So it's the same thing for high altitude training. It's how you utilize less oxygen in the air at a higher altitude because you build up more CO2 in your bloodstream to utilize that oxygen.
Fascinating. So far we've got like a couple practices. So what else would you say to the audience as far as like things that are safe for everyone to be trying, you know, not necessarily advanced practices, but so breathing through the nose, maybe doing this simple test to see, you know, can I hold my breath out for how long? What else would be kind of some basic baby steps to this breathing approach?
The real baby step, and I have tested this out. I led a hike up at Elk Mountain Reserve last weekend. And it was a yoga hike, and we had to hike up first to this beautiful, you know, area under this great tree and do yoga. And I challenged everyone to see if they could inhale for 2 steps and exhale for 2 steps through their nose only until we got to the top of the hike. Everybody found it very, very difficult. So, yeah, it's not simple. They found it difficult, but they were all game and they all played the game. And I said, you know, if you need to stop, it's okay. And I stopped because it was a pretty steep hike. So I stopped a couple times along the way and we just kind of self-regulated. And then when we got to the top, I was kind of checking everybody out. She was having trouble. And so I immediately went to what my teacher taught me, Patrick McCowan, said, from the Buteyko method. So this comes out of the Buteyko method, and he was a Russian physician who developed the Buteyko method of breathing. And it's about breathing less and how you restore your breath. And so what we did was we just breathing normally, and then we would just hold our nose for a count of 3, and then let go and breathe for 10 or 15 seconds, and then hold your nose for a count of 3, and then just breathe normally for 10 seconds, and keep repeating for a minute to anywhere from 2 to 3 minutes. And it will restore your CO2 levels in your system, change the pH of your blood. It's amazing. Your pH of your blood will change, and you will come back to rest and digest.
Wow. And so you were having her hold her nose after the exhale?
Mm-hmm.
So can we tie it into yoga, right? Because yoga teaches there's retentions, certain right. retentions, right? So could you link it to that with your past experience?
When I went back a year or two ago and read the Hatha Yoga Pradipika, nowhere in the book, this is the ancient book on yoga that people refer to all the time, nowhere in the book did it say you should take a really huge breath, that you should inhale for a count of 40 and then exhale. For, nowhere in that book. What was in the book was, how long could you stop your breath? So in the cessation of breath, you control consciousness. So consciousness is linked to breath, not the mind. Consciousness is linked to breath. So just making these small exhalations and just being able to hold without stress is sort of a way of sort of resetting your respiratory system. And then you can go from there and work from there with other breath holds, right? The word's not out. I think for anybody who has any health compromise, whether it's a COVID, long COVID, asthmatic, cancers, Parkinson's, any of those sorts of things that are sort of inflammatory in nature, that the breath should only be held on the exhalation, not on the inhalation. That there's when we hold the breath on the inhalation, what it does is it moves, it may make more acetylcholine, according to Dr. Ladd, it makes more acetylcholine, but it moves the energy up, right? It moves the energy up, and that's okay. So when we move the energy up, when you think about it, what do you think you do when you're stressed? You trigger the sympathetic system and you go up in the chest, and you have a big breath in your chest and you go up, right? And so just to remember that anytime we go up and hold, you're stimulating the sympathetic system. And when you go down and hold, you're regulating the parasympathetic system. So the take-home message, the simple take-home message is pay attention to your breathing. If you're doing a lot of rapid, shallow breathing, you're in sympathetic mode. If you're breathing with just your chest and not breathing low into your belly and your abdomen and your ribs, you're in sympathetic mode. So when you're in sympathetic mode, you're actually probably CO2 deficient. And if you're in a if you're stressed out, right? If you're stressed out and having some sort of anxiety or deep stress, then anything can set you off because you don't have any reserves. You don't have the reserves. So to remember to take time to down-regulate the system. And I think that's a great take-home message. Breathe through the nose, not the mouth. Tape your mouth shut at night if you can. Practice during the day with maybe just a little piece of tape holding your lips together so you get used to it. So you notice that after a while your sinuses do open up. And of course there are individuations about that, and there are nasal spreaders for people with deviated septums and all that kind of stuff. So that's a whole therapy thing on that way. But in a general sense, if you can move into that region and then practice just holding the nose a little bit and letting go. And I think what people will notice is their meditation will get deeper when they take time. So even if in your pranayama practice, you're doing a hyperventilation, such as a Bhastrika, a Kapalabhati, where you're pumping the diaphragm and pumping the breath. You know, I love those. They have a place. They have a place. I love them because they help. When I go into, and it has a technical name, but when I go into a oxygen-deprived state, which is what those breaths do, the Kapalabhati and Bhastrikas, they deprive the brain of oxygen. So when I go into oxygen-deprived state, something else happens in my brain, and I notice that the chatter stops. Okay, and I notice the chatter stops. But then I have to go back. If I don't down-regulate and spend an equal amount of time with my exhales and holds, then during the day, what I notice is that I get spacier. My brain isn't as sharp. I'm not as clear. I'm not as clear. And as much as holding the breath while you're walking, which is the next level one would go to after cadence walking, is actually holding your breath in your nose while you're walking, even though I find that to be really uncomfortable and cumbersome. I'd say uncomfortable and cumbersome. It's like really a discipline. The result I get is uncomfortable. But what happens afterwards is there's more oxygen in my brain because there's more CO2 buildup in my system. And I'm pushing my Bolt score up higher and higher by doing that. And then my mind gets really clear.
You've answered a couple questions that I had for you. So I want to kind of like say them backwards and say that, because one of the questions I had was, how can someone tell what's right for them? And you've answered it by saying a little bit you can tell in the moment when you're doing the breathing exercise, but it's a little bit maybe perhaps more revealing how you feel later that day. Or if you do the practice ongoing, how you start to feel over time and noticing the state of your awareness. Now you're very tuned in. You're a yogi for many, many years. So you're very tuned in to your state of awareness and your body and your breath, whereas a lot of us are not that at that level yet. So, but we can pay attention. And then the other thing I'm just taking away that I personally feel happy to hear is that sometimes for me, it's hard to, you know, carve out more time to sit still and breathe. I do a lot of walking already because of my life. And so
I can do some of these practices in motion, which is good for me to know.
So let me address that just a tiny bit. So the way to start incorporating that with your walk is warm up your chemistry, and you do that just by standing still and holding your nose for a three count and letting go, And then after you've done that for a minute, 10 seconds off, hold for three, 10 seconds off. And if you slow your breath down, it's like 10 seconds could be one breath or two breaths. So two breaths in between and then hold for three and two breaths, but low breaths, not in the chest, not deep breathe, not when we think of deep breathing, you say to people, take a deep breath. They suck the breath up into their chest. That's not the breathing I'm talking about. I'm talking about breathing low in the body and deep. So it's like down into the pelvis. So the breath goes down and the bottom ribs expand sideways. And that's something that I did learn in the Iyengar method, I'm happy to say, how to cultivate that ability. And then you can start walking, and then you just start off with an easy walk. And after you've walked for 30 seconds or so, just hold your nose for 4 or 5 seconds, and then walk another 30 seconds, hold your nose again, and watch for the buildup of air hunger. So the idea is that you're actually trying to stimulate a little bit of air hunger by holding the nose as you're moving, so that you know when you have air hunger that you're resetting the CO2 receptors in your brain, and you're asking them to take in and be harmonious with more CO2.
You've shared so much already. Is there anything else that you would want to tell a yogi?
Yes.
Who is... the Kriya Yogi community, Kriya Yoga community, I mean, our teachers taught us to go all the way. I mean, that's the example they led was to they became enlightened, which is amazing, right? That's not a common teaching in our society. Just focus, do what you got to do, and wake up, do it this lifetime. So what would you tell someone with that goal in their mind about breathing and what they should be thinking about, maybe in addition to what we've already shared? Or
so there are lots of different breathing practices. There's no really right way. The main takeaway is if you're upregulating, also spend time downregulating, mm-hmm. with some breath holds at the bottom. So that's important. And then the other piece is if you're doing those breath of fire and those Kriya type power breaths to really stimulate the mind and get everything buzzing, that's wonderful. But then there's also something called Brahmari or Brahmari, which is the humming breath, right? Where you can just or you can do the full yoga path, which is you block the ears, you put the fingertips on the forehead and the inside of the nose and slightly bow the head and you hum, so that you're vibrating your head, you're vibrating your chest, and your diaphragm's toning. It's going to make your diaphragm tone because it's like singing, because it's a long breath and you're you're singing, right? And so that and then to just be still. And then it's like what Dr. Laden, from his perspective, talks about, so hum. So you think of inhaling so and exhaling hum, and then you make the breath as light as possible. You know, you feel the breath, cool breath coming in, the warm breath going out, and then you keep slowing it down until the nasal hairs themselves stop moving. So after that Brahmari, then you go to that really, because you cleared the way, And interestingly enough, the Brahmari is going to help restore the CO2 balance because it's like singing. And then you just get still and open yourself up and remember that you're, that the pillar of light goes from a, of your own being, everybody's own being goes from well above the crown of the head. Those chakras are 3 feet above your head, all the way through the central channel, all the way into out the pelvis into the earth. So we're traversing heaven and earth all the time in the unseen. Yeah. And just connect to that and then be open and be open. So if you have a problem, something's been troubling you and it's back in your mind again, that's the time when we're ripe to just surrender it. I'm going to turn it over to my spiritual body. I'm going to give it to my spiritual body and let my spiritual body guide me. And then just be receptive, be still and listen and let it in. Just be still and listen. Mm-hmm. And that's the beauty of pranayama, that when we control the breath, we're connected to consciousness.
I love what you just shared and I can't wait to listen to it again. And what I was loving the most about it is you never met our teacher, Roy Eugene Davis. I never got you to come down and meet him, but you know, the truth is the truth and people have studied many different paths, right? And, but the truth is the truth. And all of the great teachings say exactly what you just did. You use your tools. We all have tools in our toolkit. Pranayama is a tool. We have many different breathing tools. We find what works, what helps us be quiet. And then Roy often said this as well, the breath becomes very subtle. It's, you know, you don't think eventually it even that disappears from your awareness and you just wait and watch. And so thank you for saying it in your words, which were beautiful and very aligned to, I think, many of our listeners from other traditions besides Kriya will benefit from that too.
And that's, it's very interesting for me lately. I've been, you know, where is the boundary when a breath practice is too physically oriented or too spiritually oriented and separate from the physical? And where is that integration place in the middle? And I would think that Patrick McCowan's idea is the same, that you get to a place where the breath is so subtle that you hardly know you're breathing. Mm-hmm. And that when you do that, you're really more present than ever. Or say, you're, and that's what I like about this exercise that I'm doing with the breath holds, even though some of it's uncomfortable, is that my mind gets so clear and I feel alive and I feel really present. And I still need to go into my spiritual aspect of my practice deeply in order for that to have balance. So I still have to go to my heart of appreciation, my heart of compassion, let the nourishment of spirit come into me, let go of anything that might be turn over the things I have no control over that I just have to turn over, you know, and then try and be compassionate and be present to life as it is. So that's, and then spirit will guide me as it is there to guide all of us if we find the, create the avenues to listen. And they're unseen avenues, you know? So yogis who are going for the big connection, yeah, let's say the big connection or that flow state, that spirit's flowing, that you're in alignment with your heart and your alignment with your spiritual body, your spiritual heart, and your physical heart. So in alignment with both. So that's really, for me, that's the goal.
Yeah. Amen. Is there anything else you wanted us to know about pranayama and breathing today?
Listen to your body. do the practices, pay attention. If you've upregulated, then take time to downregulate. Mm-hmm. And if you have a condition, go slow. Mm-hmm. Less is more, especially with breath, less is more. So go slow, go easy, pay attention, and see what result comes to you.
Is there anyone who shouldn't practice these basics we talked about, such as the very short nose holds, or
according to the Buteyko method and Patrick McCowan, who studied directly with Dr. Buteyko in Russia, that is safe for everybody and helpful for everybody, whether they have COPD, whether they have long COVID, whether they have asthma, other lung conditions, that is a helpful practice and not harmful. He got nervous with me because I'm 73 when I did his course recently. He got nervous with me thinking like, well, don't push yourself. You're older. Don't push yourself. And I thought, yeah, but I'm a yogi. You don't know who I am.
He didn't know who he was talking to.
You know
your body so well. Well, I'm so glad we talked about this, and I'm sure listeners will have questions, and you've shared your links with me, so we'll put those in the podcast notes. But before we wrap up, I'd like to also just hear, like, if you're willing to share your personal routine. We've heard a lot about your walking that you're doing now, but like, I don't know what your morning routine or your night routine. I always love hearing about other yogis' routines, because I remember in your yoga room, I remember this from 20 years ago, there's a art piece of artwork that says, submit to a daily practice. That in itself is a key in the door. I think it's a Rumi quote. And so I'd love to hear about your daily practices.
Well, right now, because it's the height of summer, and it's pre-dawn is at 5:45, I'm awake. And I'm typically doing, you know, I usually do the typical thing, go to the bathroom, brush my teeth, hydrate, a very yogic practice, brush my teeth, scrape my tongue, do my lemon and honey water, or some green juice, and then I go and I sit and I do pranayama and meditation. And then set my tone for the day and my connection to my spiritual path. And then I would, on some days, depending on the demands on me, I may have to just go into some sort of activity. And so I'll have breakfast and do an activity, or I'll do a walk and do a little breath work on the walk before breakfast. Or I do an asana practice before breakfast. I'm pretty consistent. Some mornings I've had to jump up and take care of business, do something else. But, you know, I'm fairly consistent. Probably five days a week it unfolds like that. And, it's my commitment to my good health. It's my commitment to, and this is how it is that, because I'm doing these breathing practices now, this is how it is I've been able to unplug the CPAP machine. So, you know, my heart rate had gone up. It was really scary. The doctor had wanted to put me on medicine, and I did not go on the medicine. I went to my breath, and I started doing cadence walking and breathing exercises. I did some Bastrika, because Bastrika will reset the rhythm of the heart. According to Dr. Vasant Lad, and according to my own experience as well. And so there are ways to apply tools and techniques, and one can change one's state. One can change one's state. One can make different choices, put other practices in place that sustain our well-being. And then I have to say, Miss Joan, I have to say that I'm really happy to know women like you who are at least 10 years younger than I am, because if I keep staying healthy, I need some friends after a while.
Yeah, well, hopefully I'll be around with you. Well, and before we wrap up, is there anything you wanted to share as far as, like, if people are wondering if they have personal questions, like if they want to have a private lesson to consult about a certain
condition. Do you want to say anything about that?
I'd be happy to do any kind of private consult with people. They can find that through my website with one of those links. I'm managing several different aspects of life right now. And it's looking like probably September will be the time that I'll offer a breath course. So, it won't be August even. It'll probably be in September. there's just been...
Life
is busy sometimes. Life is busy sometimes, you know. Anyway, so I hope to do a little freebie on the breath pretty soon. It'll be available through my website. I haven't done it yet, but I'm getting closer. I just need a little more time because I'm investigating that transition space. You know, you've got your gunas, you've got your sattva, your rajas, your tamas, you've got your gunas that go back and forth. And it's that crossover place in the middle. It's kind of like where the physical then becomes the spiritual, and the spiritual becomes the physical. And I'm kind of playing with that boundary just now. And as soon as that clarity comes, then I'll go ahead and make that freebie for people. But I want to be clear for people.
Yeah. Well, we'll be happy to receive it. I wonder, now my little routine has become, I usually like my guests to actually close the podcast, so I don't talk at the very end. We have a little recording that comes at the end, but I wondered if you would close today. You may have had something in mind, but what I would love is maybe you could lead us through just a short breathing activity or a centering activity. Would you be open to that?
Well, we've done a couple already, but let's do one where there's no other talking. Okay.
Yeah. And so I'll just go ahead and say thank you. And then we'll let them hear your voice until the end of the podcast, and I'll receive it too. Thank you.
That's very precious. Okay. Thank you, Joan. So if you would sit comfortably with your feet on the floor, uncross your legs, sit on your sits bones, and find a way that your spine is supported. And then imagine there's a string drawing you up from the crown of your head, allowing the spine to be connected to that string. And become aware of your breath. Notice your inhalation. Notice where it is in your body. And notice the relationship of your inhalation to your exhalation. And begin relaxing your shoulders and your arms. Of course, breathing through the nose only. And see if you can allow the breath to fall into your belly when you inhale. And it's not that I want you to push your breath out. I want you to receive your breath. But let go of any tension in the abdomen, any inner tension, so the breath can fall easily into the lower part of your body. And then in your mind's eye, determine what is the natural length of your inhalation. It might be a 2, it might be a 3, it might be a 4. We don't want to push it past a 4. Anything up to a 4 count or 4 heartbeats, however you want to judge that. So notice your inhale. And And notice your exhale. And then let's see if you can make your exhalation 1.5 times your inhalation. So if you're inhaling for 2, exhale for 3. If you're inhaling for 3, exhale for 5. And if you're inhaling for 4, exhale for 6. The rhythm of the breath is completely individual. It's your choice. And when you're exhaling now, squeeze in on your abdomen, the sides and the front of the abdomen, as if you were hugging your belly. Relax on the inhalation, let the breath fall in. So don't make a lot of effort, don't create tension. Create relaxation. And by exhaling longer than the inhale, we begin to tone the parasympathetic system, begin to harmonize and relax the diaphragm completely, allowing us to let go of tension in the neck and shoulders, going deeper into a state of stillness. And then think about the diaphragm. Think about the bottom ribs expanding to receive your inhalation. And it's natural over a 5 or 8 minute period of time that your breath would naturally become a little longer, a little slower, a little deeper in the body. And then lightly turn your eyes up toward the third eye, just turn up toward the crown. And once we've reset the rhythm of the breath and the diaphragm is really relaxed, then make the breath more subtle. Cool air coming in through the nose, warm air going out. Let that become softer and more subtle as well. And let's just notice this moment as a way in which we're nourishing our nervous system. Bringing ourselves back to a copacetic balance and harmony. And making us ready for the next step in the day and in our life. So I'm going to say namaste. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to the Spirit-Led Podcast. Special thanks to our producer, Monty Craig. Please subscribe to catch upcoming episodes. For support in your awakening journey, visit our sponsor, the Center for Spiritual Awareness, at csa-davis.org. We offer online group meditations, classes, and in-person retreats at our headquarters in Lakemont, Georgia. Once again, that's csa-davis.org. Until next time, remember your pure essence of being, an eternal relationship with the infinite.